Hi, listeners. It's Tucker Ligursky. As a researcher on Masters of Scale, I use the innovations of AI on a daily basis. And with an increasingly overcrowded market, it's hard to discern which ones are truly beneficial for my work, not to mention safe. That's where Grammarly comes in. My job requires me to prepare dozens of documents every day. And with Grammarly, I'm able to make my dossiers and research documents clear, more direct, and more concise. In fact, I recently discovered that Grammarly users spend 66% less time editing content, which is a huge advantage since our most precious resource is undoubtedly time. What I love about Grammarly is its commitment to responsible AI. My team works tirelessly to produce top-quality podcasts, and it's vital that we keep our data secure. Grammarly has been around for 14 years and has maintained a business model dedicated to never selling your data, which means you can trust it with your most sensitive information. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster and hit their goals while keeping their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
Hi, listeners. It's Aaron Bastinelli, an audio engineer here at Wait What. As you know, behind every successful business is a story. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to the founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failures, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
The whole social media game has been, I just need to play the new game with the changing rules, and you don't know what the game is. Like, I know TikTok has been really fun. I know you also need to take that same energy to Instagram Reels, to YouTube Shorts. Like, it's there. Already, just with the algorithm changing every week, there are some times when I am on TikTok and my videos will get tons of crazy views, like 25 million views, so that, you know, I get 600,000 clicks over to a product and sell it within like a few hours. And then there was a time when I posted a video, and I remember that video getting literally 12 views. Now, this is on 3.5 million followers. And I was like, what's going on?
Hi, everyone. Bob Safian here. That's Cassie Ho, an entrepreneur with 17 million social media followers. She runs a pair of brands, Blogilates and PopFlex, that revolve around workout videos and workout gear. I wanted to talk to a business person in the trenches with TikTok as the U.S. government considers banning the app. Cassie's social media footprint goes back to 2009, and so she's navigated through multiple shifts, the rise of new platforms, changing algorithms. She describes TikTok's plight as just the latest twist in an ever-changing environment. Her experiences and perspective provide a window inside a core part of the economy that's essential for every business to understand. This is Rapid Response.
We'll start the show in a moment, after a word from our premier brand partner, Capital One Business.
I woke up in the middle of the night because I had this nightmare that we were front page news, that we've done the stupidest mistake of our life by making this pivot.
That's Aparna Saran, Chief Marketing Officer for Capital One Business. And she's recalling a moment from her previous position at Capital One when she was heading up a team designing a new business card.
We had just made the decision to go all in and sunset the prior version of the product, which was honestly the cash cow for our business. When we made that decision within a senior leadership meeting, as someone who had been on the journey to build this out for 5+ years, it was really exciting. But by the time the weekend hit, I started to feel the responsibility and the pressure. We are taking this big bet on something that I've built.
Perhaps you've been there. You've made a pivotal decision, and then panic sets in. How would Aparna calm her butterflies and steer her team through this pivot? We'll find out later in the show. It's all part of the Refocus playbook, a special series where Capital One Business highlights stories of business owners and leaders using one of Reed's theories of entrepreneurship. Today's playbook insight: have multiple plan Bs.
I'm Bob Safian. I'm here with Cassie Ho, the founder, CEO, and lead designer of workout brands Blogilates and PopFlex. It's great to have you with us here.
Thanks for having me.
You've built a terrific business using social media platforms as fuel, YouTube initially, now masses of followers everywhere. Do you think of yourself as an influencer? Like, what does that word mean to you?
To be completely honest, the moment the word influencer came to be, I was very turned off by it because it sounds like such a vapid term. Like, what are you influencing? It doesn't really give much. So I prefer to call myself an entrepreneur, a content creator. But yeah, I don't like the word influencer. Now, to explain to some people what I do in like one word, like that kind of says it, but it doesn't encapsulate everything that I do.
No, that creator label seems to be more what folks are, like you are gravitating to. So I want to start by asking you about TikTok. DC folks right now are making noise about banning the platform, even though millions of users are devoted to it. How have you thought about and used TikTok in your business?
So TikTok is one of the platforms that I post on. I post on TikTok, IG, YouTube Shorts. I create design videos and I take my followers kind of through the design journey of like, here's a problem, I need to solve it, and here is how I did that. And by the end of the 60-second video, you see the product that I ended up with. Now, these things take, you know, anywhere between 12 months to a couple years of development, all compressed into a 60-second video. And a lot of times these videos go super viral on certain platforms, sometimes on all three platforms. And so that's how I use the platforms to market my products. So when it comes to the TikTok ban, my eggs aren't all in one basket. Of course, it's going to be sad to possibly lose one of them, but I don't know what's going to actually happen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and is it frustrating? Because, I mean, you spend some effort, some time to build up a following on that platform, and you've got a large one, right?
Yeah, I think there's like 3.5 million just on that one.
Yeah, that's a hefty group of people, potential customers, you know, and that might just go away.
I mean, to be completely honest, the whole social media game has been, I just need to play the new game with the changing rules, and you don't know what the game is. And already, just with the algorithm changing every week, there are some times when I am on TikTok and my videos will get tons of crazy views, like 25 million views, so that, you know, I get 600,000 clicks over to a product and sell it within like a few hours. And then there was a time when I posted a video that, and I spend like 9 to 10 hours editing, voiceover, writing, like all of these things, filming, and you put up this video that you put so much work into. And I remember that video getting literally 12 views. Now, this is on 3.5 million followers. And I was like, what's going on? So I reached out to TikTok and they're like, oh, well, pretty much maybe you should just make better content. I'm just like, no, this is something else. And so this has actually happened like a few different times and I don't know what it is. I'll have to delete the video, put it up again. So like these glitches have already honestly felt like what a TikTok ban would have felt like. And I actually even went into the Reddit forums and kind of was like, why is this video getting 12 views? In the Reddit forum, it said, do not say YouTube, Instagram, or anything in your videos, or you'll get shadow banned. And like, the crazy thing is, I took off my video, removed YouTube, and wrote YT, and that video ended up going viral. So there is something going on that is fishy and weird, and I never know what the new rules are. Whatever happens is going to happen, and we're going to have to deal with it.
But that way, also, if you're posting the same thing on multiple platforms, you don't necessarily know which one sort of led to more of your business, right? I mean, you'll know how many views you got, but not necessarily that it drove more activity. Or
Can you tell?
You can, actually. You can break it down by platform. And I actually can tell that the conversion rate is actually higher on Instagram Reels compared to TikTok. When TikTok goes viral, it can go crazy, but you can't rely on it. Because, right, you're going to get the 12 views and get the 25 million views or whatever. You maybe land somewhere in between with like 50K and you barely get any sales. So I would say Instagram Reels probably within the past year has been a lot more consistent. And right now, doing better for me than TikTok.
But you're not necessarily sure why all the time. You're just having to jump and experiment at different times.
And it's incredibly frustrating. And I have to be so transparent in saying that it plays with me emotionally as well, because I'm someone who thinks that I can put in a lot of hard work and get the reward out of it, right? Like get the sales or get the views. But sometimes with the algorithm changing, you don't know why your video just isn't doing well. And for my personality type, which is like I am a super perfectionist, it really affects my self-worth. And I actually talk to a lot of creators about this. And there are times that we go through, you know, this social media career, and there are certain weeks throughout the year when the algorithm is doing bad for everyone, and everyone's just really sad. And we all think it's going to be the end of our career and we're going to be irrelevant. So these are very normal conversations that happen, I think, a couple or a few times a year. But then the algorithm changes and then you're back to normal. And it's just, it's a game.
And you're not worried that if TikTok went away, that you'd be irrelevant because there are enough other options for you to interact with folks through.
I know TikTok has been really fun. I know we've been able to grow. And so for some people, been able to like really thrive their businesses on TikTok. But you also need to take that same energy to Instagram Reels, to YouTube Shorts. Like it's there. Like should something happen to TikTok, post that same video.
You mentioned this. You started as a content provider on YouTube, workout videos on YouTube, and you expanded into products. Why? Like, is that a better business than just media?
So I think I'm a lot different than many content creators because that was never the plan. And the plan for me as a kid is that I always wanted to be a fashion designer. I'm talking about I carried around a sketchbook when I was 6 years old and would draw all the time. Then I ended up designing dresses for prom for my friends and making dresses for my Barbies. And so it was always there. Now, I started on YouTube in 2009 as a way to connect with my real life Pilates students. And the video was only supposed to be for 40 people. I was moving cross country. And so they're like, who else is going to teach this format to us? I was teaching pop Pilates, which is Pilates with pop music. Nobody was doing that at the time in where I was in LA. And so I made that video just for them. And then the next thing I saw was that there were thousands of views and hundreds of comments and people that were not my students asking for, well, do an arm version, do an ab version, do a butt version. And so that is how Blogilates started, like as a fitness YouTube channel. And in the background, I had always been making things. I was designing yoga bags. I did this water bottle that had a timestamp on it. And 1 month we sold like 30,000 units of it. So it was always there, but it wasn't until like 2016 when I was able to launch PopFlex, which is our D2C higher end activewear brand, when I really got to exercise what I always wanted to do in fashion design. But yeah, it's been a complete evolution from when I first started.
And I'm curious, so you had Blogilates as a brand and you chose to launch a second brand. Why did you feel like you needed a second brand? Why did you keep the first one when you were making that transition?
I didn't want to wear my own screen name on my clothes. That's just a me thing. I think most people would have just kept it. But it was a great decision because PopFlex now is our more, I wouldn't say high end, but higher end brand when compared to Blogilates, which you can now find at Target. So it's more of an approachable price point. And then PopFlex is where I just like go crazy with innovation and quality fabrics and just like designing to my heart's content.
So let me ask you, how did you get connected to Target? Like, how did that happen?
My husband and I were on vacation in Thailand, and we get a call from our licensing agent, and they're like, we have this opportunity, something, something Target. And I was like, what, like how? And we actually got on the call in Thailand to talk more about this. And then as soon as we got back to the States, we took a red eye all the way over to near the Target headquarters, and we had a meeting and presented to the buyer. And it was a tough meeting. I didn't know if they liked it or not, but eventually we got the purchase order. But it was a test at first. We made some products and they were going to test us for 4 to 6 weeks, but everything sold out within like 2 weeks. It went absolutely wild. And so that's how that relationship started. And because it's been quite successful, we're still there, and it's still a dream to walk into Target and see that.
For those listening to this whose brands haven't been built on social platforms, what do you think a lot of brands and businesses miss when they're trying to engage? Because it can often seem like just a crowded, noisy space. And I think that scares some folks away.
Yeah, I think what makes a brand really special, especially these days, is having a face you can connect to, a humanness. Yeah, I think marketing has really changed over the past few years, and people love the real, they love the raw, they love seeing real customer bodies on the clothes, and they really just want you in there talking with them. I think talking about the journey of building the brand, building the business, showing yourself shipping the packages, right? Like these are things people want to see that's real, like that it's coming from a human. I think the more humanness you can bring into the brand, the better. And also talking about your failures as well. Like sometimes I'll put up videos showing like what I call my bad samples, designs that died, like things that just didn't make it through because it was so horrendous and I had to give up. And that's fun too, because you've really got to show all the parts of yourself if you really want that honest and raw relationship with your audience.
Raw and honest. It's an imperative that's increasingly embraced across the business landscape, and it seems likely to persist whether TikTok stays or goes. After the break, Cassie shares how she competes for followers against other brands, her battles with a toxic situation that forced her to remake her team, and more. We'll be right back.
We'll be back in a moment. After a word from our premier brand partner, Capital One Business.
There was panic that set in that night because I didn't want to let people down.
We're back with Aparna Saran of Capital One Business. She was recalling the time she woke up in a cold sweat, terrified that the new product she had been working on might fail. So the next morning, she sat down and wrote an email.
It was Sunday morning, and I said, you know what? I'm going to just like share this with my peers. It was very emotional. It was like sort of a cry for help.
Aparna realized that if the new product didn't take off, she needed a plan B, preferably multiple plan Bs.
I'm inviting them to be the thought partners so that we are mitigating as much risk as possible and we have contingency plans in place as we make this move. You'd write something like this and your heart is pounding, should I send this? It was a super vulnerable moment for me. But then I was like, I'm going to just send this. Like, what's the worst that'll happen? It can't be worse than being on the front page of the newspaper.
So she held her breath and hit send. What happened next would surprise even her. We'll hear about that later in the show. It's all part of Capital One Business's Spotlight on Business Leaders, following Reed's Refocus Playbook.
Before the break, we heard social media entrepreneur and designer Cassie Ho talk about the pros and cons of TikTok and how she built an audience of 17 million social followers. Now she talks about the ruthless competition among digital brands, balancing product vision with audience feedback, what it's like to work alongside her husband, and more. Let's jump back in. Cassie, social media has made it easier for someone like you to build a business, but social also makes it easier for new brands to come along too. How do you think about the competitive landscape?
Back during pandemic times, all of these athleisure brands were popping up. Everyone was blowing up because at that time, everybody was working out at home. And I remember telling my husband, and I keep referencing him because he's also the COO of our company, and we talk about work all the time. It just never stops. But I was like, there's going to be a day when we all cannot exist. Like, you just, this is not, you can't have this many activewear brands if you're not selling something different. We've seen brands already start to die out. And I'm not just talking about the Instagram ones, like when Beyonce's Ivy Park had to shut down. Like I'm talking about big brands with big financial backing. And so in order to stand out in the market, you really need to be doing something different. That's why I don't design anything unless I'm making a difference with the design.
Do you know what gave you the confidence to sort of quit your day job and do Blogilates full time? Like, is there a story around that about how you made that decision?
So in 2009, I put up my first YouTube video, and it was never meant to be anything. There was no like ad campaigns or making any money off of that. It was just really for connection, right? Okay. So then I get my first job on the East Coast. I'm getting into fashion buying, and I absolutely hate my job. But during this time, I actually was designing a yoga bag for myself. I bring it to class, and my students are like, "What's that? Like, I want one of those." And so I made some and ended up putting it on like a tiny little website that I made by myself. And then I also shipped out three bags to like Women's Health, Shape Magazine, Fitness Magazine. And then one day my sister texts me a picture and she's like, "Is that your bag in Shape Magazine?" And I was like, "Excuse me, what?" So I run out to the nearest Target during lunch and I flip through the Shape Magazine and I'm like, "Oh my God, like this is a sign, right? I'm hating my job." And my bag that I designed just made it into a national magazine. I took that as a sign that, hey, you can do this. And so what I did was I ended up quitting my job probably within like the next couple of weeks. And then I bought a ticket to China on a Friday and I left on Sunday because I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go hard. So I went to China to go to the Canton Fair to find a manufacturer. And I know I look Chinese and Chinese Vietnamese. That's what I actually am. But I don't actually speak Chinese. And so I had to get an interpreter and like really figure things out. I was probably like 22 or something. I just went for it. And that was the moment that I decided to make designing my real thing. Now, in terms of content creation, because that's a different story, right? The moment that I knew that there was something more here actually does lead back to product. So this is probably around 2011 or something like that. And the YouTube channel was growing a lot. I might have been around like, I don't know, maybe 100,000. I definitely wasn't even at a million yet. So anyway, the fans on Facebook were like, "Cassie, can you make a shirt? Something that says Blogilates." That was the moment I realized, oh my gosh, okay, Blogilates is now a brand. And it sold out within like minutes. It was crazy.
As your business has grown, what's the biggest challenge? What's the biggest struggle?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest struggles will always be finding the right people to support your growth. My mistake back in, you know, the, what was it, like the 2016, 17, 18s, when I was young and trying to figure out how to be a manager, I was hiring people mostly for their skill and their talent and not thinking about the way we could really work together and communicate. And so there was a lot of bad stuff that went down there. And when I say bad stuff, I just mean like a lack of appreciation. I would walk into the office with my body like actually shaking. My breathing was abnormal. My heartbeat was abnormal. It was just wasn't the right people. And when you're not around the right people, they suck the energy out of you and you feel like you're not capable of anything. And in 2018, I almost wanted to quit everything. And there's something magical that happens when you're really at that breaking point, but you just try one more time really hard and it makes you so much stronger. And anyway, some people left and some people got let go. I mean, that's what it is. And look, it's like any relationship, right? If it's not working out, it's not working out. And we just need to end this chapter and we both need a fresh start.
A lot of businesses start with co-founders, not necessarily spouses. What should people think about if they're considering sort of blurring the lines between their business life and their personal life the way you've chosen to do it?
I am very fortunate that Sam and I are both good at different things, very different things, and bad at very different things. So there is this natural divide between who's going to do what. Like, I'm more of the creative, the visionary, the design side, the marketing. And Sam loves numbers. He loves analytics and all that kind of stuff. And because of that, when we do get in any fights, we have to remember whose arena this is and we let that person lead.
And you try not to bring it home, or is it just home all the time?
Oh, it's home all the time because we're remote. So we work from home and, like, you know, we'll eat lunch or dinner and still talk about what happened at work. There was a time when we were like, okay, definitely no talking about work after a certain time, but it just felt so unnatural. And anyway, this is the season that we're in, the season of growth. And in order to keep that growth, like, you know, sustained, I guess we're just working all the time. Anyway, what else would we be doing if we're not working? Well, I guess we could go on that vacation.
Well, I hope you do that too. Cassie, this was great. Thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. This was fun.
What I take away from listening to Cassie is how much the Wild West nature of social-based businesses reflects heightened competition everywhere. Social media has upended traditional customer engagement, but then social media itself has been upended over and over and over by Instagram, by Snapchat, by TikTok, and so on. TikTok's fate from here is a geopolitical one at this point. Even for someone with 3.5 million followers there, looking at that audience as a defining asset is risky. The overarching lesson is that while a platform can be super impactful in accelerating a business, becoming reliant on one can make you vulnerable. Take the good, avoid the bad, and stay on your toes. I'm Bob Safian. Thanks for listening.
And now, a final word from our brand partner, Capital One Business.
Throughout the day, text messages and emails kept pouring in. Whatever you need, just let us know.
We're back one more time with Aparna Saran of Capital One Business. She was telling us about a Sunday morning email she fired off in a moment of panic. Minutes later, her inbox was overflowing, and the support she found wasn't just emotional, it was practical.
We talked about detailed contingency plans, and we created our go-to-market strategy before we are in full rollout mode. We had stage gates so that we could test and quickly learn and iterate. And within a matter of like 6 months, as we were rolling things out channel by channel, those stage gates would allow us to pivot if we saw something that we didn't like.
That day, Aparna learned a lesson that stayed with her. Having multiple plan Bs doesn't just expand your options. It gives you new opportunities.
The best way to pivot is actually open doors for thoughtful conversations, because humility in knowing that you actually don't know everything, as well as the empathy in knowing that disruption is always drastic and abrupt, helps you go through that pivot with other people in a very different way.
Capital One Business is proud to support entrepreneurs and leaders working to scale their impact from Fortune 500s to first-time business owners. For more resources to help drive your business forward, visit CapitalOne.com/businesshub. That's CapitalOne.com/businesshub.
Rapid Response is a Wait What original. I'm Bob Safian. Our executive producer is Eve Troh. The production team includes Chris Gauthier, Alex Morris, Masha Makutonina, and Brandon Klein. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Original music by Eduardo Rivera and Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Molad. Visit mastersofscale.com to find the transcript for this episode and to subscribe to our email newsletter.